If you use the internet on a daily basis, and chances are you do, you probably don't put much thought into cybersecurity. You know, your network connections, the pages you visit, the files you download. You should be thinking about these all the time. Welcome to And Security for All. Your host is Kim Hakem. We're here to help you understand, in general terms, how and why your cybersecurity should be kept in check. Now, here is Kim Hakem.
Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome to another episode of And Security for All. I'm Kim Hakem, your host. We have a great show ahead of you today. Super excited for my guest today. Before I bring him on, I want to give a big shout out to the local chapter of the St. Louis WECs. As many of you know, I recently took on the president role of that board, and last night we had our first networking event at a local wine bar. We had a fun time, met a ton of new women that are in cyber here in St. Louis. Saw a bunch of my old friends, new friends, so I can't wait for our next event. We're just getting this chapter off the ground. I have a great board, and as of last night, a lot of new volunteers, so thanks for everyone coming out last night. It was a good time. If you all are interested in learning more about our local chapter, just find me on LinkedIn and send me a message, and I can make sure that we put you on our mailing list. But today, I'm super excited about our topic. It's a scary topic, actually. We're going to talk about deep fakes, cyber terrorism, and election integrity. A couple of weeks ago, we were in Kansas City, and our keynote speaker was the CISO for the state of Kansas, and he did an hour discussion on deep fakes and some of the struggles that are happening with the state. So it was an interesting topic. It went way too fast. I could have sat and listened to him all day long. He, John Godfrey, he was really great. He has many books out there and soon to be on the show as a guest also. Today, my guest that I have is Morgan Wright. He is a friend of mine and FutureCon. He is the chief security advisor over at SentinelOne, and he is also a cyber terrorism, cyber crime analyst at a national news network. So, hey, Morgan, welcome to the show.
Hey.
We have Morgan Incognito today.
You know, when we start talking about deep fakes, somebody may get my voice, but I'm going to make it very hard to get my face, to get my image. So if you want to, if you people are out there trying to copy this, I'm going to hunt you down.
Well, it's so funny. I just, right as you were speaking, I saw a message over my screen, and it was from Paxton Hayes. It has nothing to do with the show. I don't know if she's watching, but I just saw that she sent me an email. So funny timing on that. So anyway, how is everything going in your world? It's been a while since we've had you on the show. Bring us up to speed with everything going on in your life, your busy, busy life.
Yeah, well, you know, we're in an interesting time because I talk a lot about things about the intersection between geopolitical stuff, between what's going on in the world. What does it mean to cybersecurity? I've done a few keynotes. Personally, I love writing stuff, but I just got my 15-page editorial document back for my manuscript that I'm working on. It's a detective with a covert CIA past. Wonder where that storyline came from as he's taking on the world. But the biggest thing, though, is it's been fun working with SentinelOne, but it's been really fun getting out there and just really discussing these issues about what's going on in the world right now and tying it back. What does it mean to me? What is what's going on in Israel with Israel and Hamas mean? What does it mean with Russia, Ukraine? What does it mean with China and the South China Sea, Taiwan, issues like that going on? I mean, there are just so many things out there right now, Kim, that are going on. And this is going to be a few years ago, I was the senior law enforcement advisor for the Republican National Convention. So I'm being asked about some insight into what's going on with the upcoming DNC, RNC. What kind of threats are we facing that we haven't faced before, like 4 years ago? So the world is not getting any, I hate to say it, but I don't think the world's getting any safer at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you're the expert, and we have so much going on. And with it being an election year, I mean, I don't even know what to think. Where to even begin with the conversation. I definitely don't want to make this a hour-long political conversation, but let's talk with some of the latest things that you're seeing as far as deep fakes and what our audience should be aware of and just common things that people probably don't even realize they are a deep fake. let's just kind of start from there and kind of break that down and talk about what you're seeing as a deep fake and what our audience should be aware of.
Here's something interesting. So back in October, in Slovakia, there was an election that was being held between a candidate who was pro-Western and a candidate who was more pro-Russian. Well, 48 hours before elections happen in Slovakia, they have what they call a quiet period. There's no campaigning, can't put out ads, can't do anything. It's just a quiet period. An audio came out purporting to show that the pro-Western candidate was colluding with somebody to fix the election, to make sure that they could stack the vote and do certain things that would be illegal. Well, here's the interesting thing. First of all, it happened in that 48-hour period, so nobody could respond to it. Second of all, it was it propagated widely over Facebook because Facebook had a policy that said they would only take down doctored video. They had no policy about doctored audio. So this thing was allowed to exist. And what happened was the pro-Russian candidate in a very tight election won. And so people are wondering, is this one of the first examples to where a deep fake maybe influenced an election? Because if you watch the news, like about a month ago, this same Russian, pro-Russian candidate was, there was an attempted assassination on him. So, this, you know, these things have impact. And so part of the danger with this is, I just got through writing a couple things on this, but it goes back to something Jonathan Swift said, and this is back from 1600s. But it's really about, it kind of morphed into what John or Mark Twain said about, you know, the lie can make it halfway around the world before the truth can lace its boots up. We're seeing this now with deep fakes. And here's what's happened with deep fakes. We have now changed the burden of proof. The burden of proof, I came out of a law enforcement background too, detective, you see that back there, state trooper, got my buddies. I think I acquired that legally. I don't know, there was drinking involved, but that the hat, the Bobby helmet from London belongs to a bloke named Nigel Phillips. If you're listening, Nigel, sorry, pal, it's mine now. But if you think about these things that's going on, the burden of proof used to be you go into court. When I was a detective, you testify, the state, the government has the burden of proof. They have to prove that you did it beyond a reasonable doubt. You don't have to prove a thing. You don't have to say anything. You don't even have to mount a defense. The government has all the burden. What we're seeing now with deepfakes is now the burden of proof is now shifted. Now people are having to come out, and there's two things going on there. First of all, their initial defense is, well, it's a deepfake. It wasn't me. Or it wasn't me, you know, but here's proof. I have to go back and prove that it wasn't me. So, and what happens in politics, like what happened in Slovakia, all it takes is a few things to get out there because you're not, Even if somebody later disproves it, it doesn't matter. The damage is done. It's anchored. People have a cognitive bias in their head. Once you anchor it in there, it's going to stay in there, and that's what you're going to remember. It's kind of like you think about looking for a car. You know, I remember looking for bought a Kia here a couple years ago, brand new Kia Telluride, and Wolf Gray. You couldn't see any of them. But the minute I went looking for one, I started seeing them everywhere, right? So it starts anchoring into your mind. You start seeing things and hearing things. Once that gets into your mind, it's very tough to undo. So we're seeing it with audio. We just saw some Russian malign influence operations came out, and it was a slick video that had Tom Cruise in it. So these things now, Kim, are approaching Hollywood status for production value, which means number one, they're going to be entertaining. Number two, they're going to have people that you recognize. And three, it's going to be, you're going to look at it and you go, well, that looks real. And the minute you say that looks real, part of the, that's the initial win. That's what they're looking for. So one other quick anecdote. I remember doing some stuff for the news. I did a couple interviews and it was about deepfake audio. And it was a mother in Arizona who had gotten a ransom. This is a scam, but it was a ransom demand to say, we have your daughter. Well, how do I know? Well, they played audio and it says, Mom, it's me. And she was crying as she said something. Well, come to find out, this daughter was out skiing. She had just posted audio is all she's done on TikTok and YouTube. And this is the danger of social media, kids, if you're listening out there. You know, be careful what goes out there because now they took it. They brought it back in. Obviously, they've got some AI tools. They generated audio. It was so good. When it can fool the mother, you're talking about fooling the mother of a child. When you can fool the mother of a child, we have achieved a level of deception that is going to be hard to unwind. So Now put it into politics, put it into, again, I tell people, you know, when I do news stuff, depending on what station I'm on, they go, oh, you're this way, that way. Look, I don't do R's and D's. I do ones and zeros. You know, that's my shtick. So I stick to that. But I'm telling you, we will see Russia's already doing things. We're looking at the UK and French elections because they've called for snap elections. So you've got in the UK, it's going to be July 4th, which there's some irony. In the UK, they're having elections on July 4th. I think we had something to do with that. And then in France, they do two rounds, June 30th and July 7th. So, you know, this is prime opportunity. This is actually the column I just wrote for put out some stuff for Sentinel One. We put it out to our global teams. It's really about in a snap election, the advantage goes to the adversary, you know, and the attacker. So some very, and this is global. So we're seeing some things all around the globe, as they say, Kim.
Well, I saw something, or I think John Godfrey, I don't know if you know him out of the state of Kansas, because aren't you from Kansas?
That says Kansas Highway Patrol State Trooper back there. You bet.
Yeah, so he was talking. He did a fabulous job. He's just doing some amazing things out there. But he was talking about when you brought up Hollywood, I think it was Scarlett Johansson. They dubbed her voice into something. And so now there's a
chat GPT, you know, open AI. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now I guess it's some sort of movie. I don't know. I forgot the particulars of what he said, but I know she's going after them for royalties on whatever it is they did with her voice. So I guess that's the beginning of those type of things that we're seeing, which to me is still not on a major scary level. The scary level is when you're talking about kids' voices and, you know, just the crazy things that we're seeing. You know, since COVID, there's so many streaming channels on TV and we're watching so many cults and just crime movies and documentaries, and it just seems to get crazier and crazier all the time, the things. I kind of get caught up in that stuff, so I watch those kind of crazy things, but you don't know what you're watching, if it's real, if it's not, and it's just...
Well, but see, that's what they're going after, right? If they can get... This is the danger. Let's talk about ChatGPT for a second. You know, large language models, the ability for AI now to do things you couldn't do before. You remember getting one of those emails from, like, the Nigerian prince, hey, I've got $26 million, mm-hmm. but the language was bad, or you get the phishing email that purports to come from your bank, and it looks like it's written bad. What ChatGPT and similar ones to that, there's Grok, you know, if you've got X, there's other large language models, there's AI tools out there. Now the danger is now you've got these people that say, write me an email that makes it look like it's actually coming from your bank, but put it in, localize it to England, localize it to Germany, localize it to here. You can now write the same email and have it be country specific, have it be culturally appropriate, language specific. I could do it in Russian. I could do, the difference between Castilian Spanish and or Spanish out of Mexico or Spanish out of Puerto Rico, you look at Brazil, let's do it in Portuguesa, you know, so there's so many different things that you could do. And now these things are getting so good at it, Kim, is that you get this now. And before it was easy to spot the fake. There used to be a contest at DEF CON called Spot the Fed. And it was easy because I can tell you from experience, they look like feds. But now spotting the fake has become much more difficult. And that's the advantage to the attacker. That's the advantage to the adversary. If they get over that initial hump with you to where it's got that plausibility, that, as they say in writing, verisimilitude, if they've got that, then they've got their initial hook on you. And now it's just working you and working up the food chain to get to your information and et cetera.
Well, Carlos, welcome to the show, Carlos. He wants to ask a question. And of course, and he said, considering the trend of our near sharing IT talent abroad the U.S. for cost efficiencies, how do you balance cybersecurity measures with the imperative to increase revenue, especially when dealing with potential regulatory challenges?
Well, hola, Carlos. Eduardo Herrera Zaga Zeta.
I'm glad you took that.
mi español es peligroso. Lo siento. Mi trabajo por cinco meses en Bogota, Colombia with the government. But anyway, but that's interesting because that is something I've talked with other people about. In fact, one of the projects I'm working on, I got a grant from the Department of Justice to build out the National Center for Open and Unsolved Cases. In part of the development, I had some issues because some of the development was occurring in certain areas of the world that I was not comfortable with. And we had to make sure that certain things that were being done didn't expose some of the things that we were doing. So part of it too is it's the control, right? It's looking at data loss prevention. It's looking at exfiltration of data. It's looking down, have you got information? Have you got data locked down? Have you got the proper biggest thing, have you got the proper policies in place? You know, before you start applying the technology, you got to figure out the outcome. What is it you want to do? What is it you want to achieve? And here are some of the regulatory challenges too that you're talking about. Now, when they look at AI, so the Biden administration, there's some executive orders out there about people who provide cloud services and AI in the cloud. If you come from certain countries or if you are certain companies, you have to register. They want to monitor what you're doing now with AI or what you're doing in the cloud, who are some of your customers, because there are some concerns. There's a list out there called OFAC, Office of Foreign Asset Control. They look at prohibited entities, people and companies that you can't do business with. So they want to make sure these companies are not on these things. But so there's nearshoring and then there's offshoring and, bringing it back home, you know, having it done, you know, in what they call CONUS, continental United States, or out, as opposed to OCONUS, outside the United States. So that's not an easy, you know, you look for what's an easy answer. There is no easy answer, Carlos. Part of it, though, is about being vigilant. It's making sure you've got the proper policies first, and then you'll deliberately apply the technology to support the policies that you want. Do you have a defined outcome? Do you know what it you want out of each area? And then it's monitoring. You've got to make sure that this stuff is being monitored on a regular basis, depending on the technologies you're doing or what kind of development being done. Is it hardware development, firmware, software? You know, it is a manufacturing plant, you know, whatever it is. If it's a lot of software, then you're looking at how do you protect your code, right? How do you protect your code base to make sure that doesn't leak? How do you, simple stuff like how do you protect emails? How do you protect against phishing? How do you protect against spear phishing? Are they coming in over VPN as opposed to other message, you know? And I'm not here to do a product pitch. So I'm not telling you, hey, go do this, go do that. All I'm telling you is I know from experience is that it matters. Every endpoint matters. You got to defend. If you connect it, you must protect it. So if you're going to connect stuff, whether it's IoT devices, whether it's you've got new computers, you got laptops, you got tablets, whatever it is, any of those things, if you connect it, you got to protect it, because everything increases your attack surface. Everything increases the point of attack to where somebody now becomes a point of vulnerability. So as you're looking at doing that, I would say, and it's also the fundamentals. I'm a huge college football fan. Go Irish, go Notre Dame. We will be victorious this year. Did my graduate work there. And I grew up there. So it was fun. But when you look at football, or even when you look at math, when you go back, and even if you take advanced math classes, what do? Sets and numbers. You got to start off with the fundamentals. So you got to start off with the fundamentals. Make sure you're doing all the proper things, good password hygiene, making sure that there's proper training if that's what you do. But I'm telling you, it's one of those things, proper patching. There's one of the biggest things right there. Microsoft doesn't suggest patches. You know, Cisco doesn't suggest patches. Dell doesn't suggest things. When they put them out, it's for a reason. It's because there's a flaw, there's a vulnerability, there's a, you know, if something's defective, it doesn't work as it's supposed to. So even doing stuff like that, but now kind of bring it full circle, and we'll close out on this one. The regulatory environment is the real challenge. I have testified before Congress a couple times on the safety and security of things like healthcare.gov. You look at what policies should we have in place, what regulations should we have in place. The SEC has put in regulations. The FCC has. You know, everybody's goes through these things. But I'll tell you what happens. If you look at what the way Sarbanes-Oxley came about, it started off with litigation. They didn't like what was happening with the filing of 10-Ks. There was fraud. There's other things. So they litigated it. And when litigation wouldn't solve it, which that's, believe it or not, you need to start off with, I'm not a big fan of lawsuits and doing a bunch of legal stuff, but you got to start off with litigation first, because if it can solve it at that level, because then the next level is regulation. And so with Sarbanes-Oxley, they tried passing some regulations at the SEC. That didn't have the full effect. So what they ended up doing, two gentlemen, one named Sarbanes, one's named Oxley, now it's legislated. And I was having this discussion. I went out to the George C. I live in Northern Virginia, went out to the George C. Marshall Center event, an off-duty event, and was talking to the deputy director of the Naval Criminal Intelligence Service. And we were just discussing about what needs to be done in cybersecurity. I said, because the defense industrial base is getting hammered by China. I said, you know, think about the regulations. What if we had something that was the equivalent of Sarbanes-Oxley in cyberspace? And I said, here's the reason I asked that. Name the last time you've seen an article of news to where a CEO of a company has been perp walked in orange after being arrested by the FBI for misstating their 10-Ks or, you know, fraud. it hasn't happened. The legislation achieved what litigation and regulation could not. So at some point, you do get these regulations, Carlos, because they've tried the litigation. It didn't work. They tried the regulation. It didn't work. So you'll get to legislation. But I think the regulatory environment is going to get tougher, especially with AI. You look at what's going on in the EU and their AI Act about, you know, looking at the levels of harm that could be done by AI, you know. So, you know, are you here? Are you here? Are you here? And then, so there's global regulations. What starts off in the EU a lot of times ends up in the United States. So that was a long-winded answer, Kim. If this were DC and I were a senator, it would be called that I would be filibustering. So,
well, speaking of DC, kind of circling over to that topic and thinking about election integrity, I mean, it's, you know what, we're less than 6 months away. And as an American, as what's your biased take on, can we have a safe election? And what is going to even happen in the next, these few months leading up to election time? It seems daunting almost.
Yeah, you know, and again, we'll stay neutral on this, but let's just look at the analytics part of this too. Is whereas there's 50 states, 3,200 counties, 19,000 cities. So the idea that you can come in and hack a total election is very difficult. But here's the thing: you don't have to hack an entire election. What you have to do is identify where are the key areas. And then attack those certain counties in Ohio. You look at swing states, Pennsylvania. You look at Wisconsin, Virginia. Virginia has trended. It used to be very red. Now it's blue in some areas, purple in others, red in some. So you look at what things do you have to change. So there's physical things you have to worry about, which is the integrity of the ballot. They've just made some arrests for one person who was arrested for ballot stuffing. They passed, going back to Carlos, what's the regulations that they're... Now they've passed a law and regulations that say on every ballot drop box, you have to have a camera. So now you've got cameras over all of these drop boxes. So there's the physical aspect to it, right? What can you do? There's the influence aspect to it, malign influence, active measures, disinformatia. This is what Russia does. This is their stock and trade. But don't discount China. A lot of people don't realize, if you go back to the 96 election, which was Bill Clinton, a Chinese national, Johnny Chang, I think his name was. I've spaced out the last name. But he was arrested by the FBI for supplying $2.1 million, I think it was, to the Democratic National Committee. And the FBI traced that money back to the Chinese consulate. So there are different tactics out there. You've got Russia, which you look at what they did in 2016. It wasn't a fair fight because Russia has 100 years of doing intelligence work. Plus, they're a 1,000-year-old country that has more grandmasters than any other country. I think Iran is second, believe it or not. In chess, so they think about these things, but they just outfoxed and they outmaneuvered Facebook and Twitter and you know, all these other social media platforms. So we're getting better at that. But I think let's do one thing here real quick too, Kim. Let's define terms, because a lot of people throw these out. They talk about disinformation and misinformation, and they don't mean the same thing. So a lot of times when you think of disinformation is actually codified in law. It is actually written in law about what disinformation is, and it really talks about things called active measures and malign influence. A lot of times disinformation is done by a state actor. Could be China, could be Russia, could be North Korea, could be Iran, could be Venezuela, could be anybody, to where it is intentionally crafted to achieve a political or national, you know, outcome. But guys, guess what? This is nothing new. I have in my Kindle and on my library over here, you can't see, the biographies of several former directors of Central Intelligence. And you know what we did back in the 70s and the 60s and the 70s? There was a thing called the 40 Committee. And we would spend money, what they called spoiling operations, to influence, not interfere, because there's another term we have to define, influence and interference. We spent money, like $1 million, I think it was, in Venezuela or maybe Peru, to influence their election, because we were trying to keep communism from spreading to South America. So there's a couple terms, disinformation, those are things, and it's, like I said, it's law, but it's designed to create a negative effect. It's usually state-sponsored, and it's sent out there. And then what happens is, if it becomes viral or if it gets spread, that disinformation, if you get it, and it resonates with you because you like that message or it aligns with your worldview, you might believe what's in there. You don't realize it's disinformation, but you might believe what's in there. And then you share that information, 100% belief that it's true, that, hey, I think, you know, it looks like it's legit. So you can turn disinformation, you know, and it can spread out there. But now misinformation is where it's usually it's unintentional. If it's intentional, you tend to put that in the disinformation bucket. But it would be like saying, hey, the game tonight is at 7 when it was actually at 6 and you show up an hour late. Sorry, I gave you bad information. It wasn't intentional. I got it wrong. If you guys have calendars out there and you've done any travel, you know it because you meant to put it for 7 o'clock Eastern, but it was booked for 7 o'clock Central. And so you're an hour off. So that's misinformation. So we define those terms and then influence and interference. So there's a lot of things, the active measure things were designed to influence us. When you get into interference, you're talking about issues of sovereignty. It's like I'm actually getting into the database and flipping votes. I'm actually getting into the database and corrupting it. So, you know, we've got to be careful about the terms influence and interference and disinformation versus misinformation. But I think one of the biggest things, the biggest impact to any election is to get it to the point of where enough, let's say, disinformation is out there that propagates and it becomes misinformation or there's misinformation out there, that it gets to a point where people question the integrity of the results. I'm not going to get into, you know, you might throw comments at me. I'm not talking about, let's not go to 2020 and talk about stuff like that. Every party has contested the results of every presidential election, period. That's what they do. This is what they do. But at the end of the day, when you can go back, if you can physically account for things, this is where paper ballots versus electronic voting kind of has some issues, because with the paper ballot, it's physical. You can count it. It can be collated. And so with electronic voting, then we've run into issues, not intentional, I don't believe sometimes, but there have been some issues about did it miscount votes? Did it double count? You know, was there the proper integrity and the way that you handled the voting machine? Was it connected at all at any time to the internet? Who had access to it? So, you know, there's just a variety of things. I'm just one of those things. It's like, I think to solve this, technology isn't always the answer. I think if I had a perfect world, you know what I would do, Kim? I would say federal election, you know, especially for the president, it's a federal holiday. You take the day off, single day voting, paper ballots, and take the whole cyber and the whole disinformation, you know, stuff out of it. It's like you got a paper ballot, you can do stuff. But that's just my view. No conspiracy theories, please. I'm just a little farm boy from Kansas.
Well, you know, I hear what you're saying, because this is the cybersecurity community is very sensitive about talking about these political matters. But we are in a time that it has to be talked about. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that we have to talk about it on one side or the other. It's just a perfect example about you talking about disinformation. I had a friend of mine that happens to have a lot of family visiting from out of the country, and COVID's like spreading through their family right now. Like 11, she's tons of people here, and tons of them have COVID. So I happened to mention it to a friend of mine that happens to be a very conservative, and said, oh yeah, I just, you know, read something. I don't know if he saw it in the Wall Street Journal or something. He said, are on one of the news stations that, COVID, they're ramping up COVID because of the election. They're trying to get more, you know, absentee ballots. So we're going to see a big influx of COVID. I kind of took what he said with a grain of salt. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to continue to stay in the middle and listen to both sides, because I don't know what's true. But it does happen that right now I'm hearing a lot of people getting COVID, but it's also June in Missouri where it's very hot, and this is the time where people get a lot of summer colds. So you just kind of have to weigh what you think. I just think you have to be careful about just believing everything that you hear.
And I will tell you, because you look at when they looked at censoring of certain kinds of information, we've now found out that some of this was accurate, or hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. Again, it's one of those things. It's that sometimes you can do too much. You can over-rotate and censor too much. I'm a firm believer is give people the information, let them decide. But I will tell you, you do reach a point to where it's kind of like there's a couple conspiracy theories out there. I give zero time to, and if somebody starts talking about it, I shut them down. First one is the moon landing. you know, okay, congratulations to 50,000 NASA employees for keeping it quiet for, you know, 60, 70 years that we landed, that we didn't land on the moon and it was all faked. You know, you can see the rocket go, you can watch the, I mean, okay, first of all, that's just BS. The second one is 9/11. All these other folks say a plane didn't really hit the Pentagon. I was in the Reagan building on 9/11. I walked across the bridge. I saw the Pentagon burning. I don't have the stories they do in New York, but don't tell me you've got videos of the planes going in there. Don't tell me that, oh, well, that somebody got warning and they were out. At a certain point, it's just it just defies plausibility. And I think those, to me, I just shut those down because I know enough. I don't need to listen to that. I don't need to believe it. But Kim, you hit upon something very important. The way these things get started is that there's just enough of a kernel of truth in there that it has plausibility. And then you wrap enough of a story around it so you can take something here, add your version of it, and you turn it into a conspiracy theory. And now that's where the damage is being done. That's the, in a sense, that's the lie making it halfway around the world before the truth can lace its boots up. But the damage is already done. So that's the thing you've got to, I think the thing we've got to teach is critical thinking. Quit accepting everything. Take Reagan's mantra, which was trust but verify, but flip it on his head. Verify first, then trust. I can't tell you how many times I've seen stuff posted on Facebook or social media. Oh, look, this is happening. And you do. It only takes a couple clicks. You go back and you say, did you read the bottom of the site website? It's a satire site. It's like people who quoted The Onion as though it was fact. Guys, it's The Onion. It's satire. Did you not even do a modicum of due diligence to figure this out?
So what do you, what are your biggest fear, not fears, but what's keeping you up every day? And, you know, what is your biggest struggles that you feel like you're in your job as a cyber security advisor? What things are keeping you worried and awake at night?
You know, I kind of got past, no offense, I just kind of got past that because I don't worry about that stuff anymore. You know, what I do is I say I control what I can and I do what I can, but I like what General Mattis used to say. He says, I sleep very fine. My job is to make other people stay awake at night. So I think one of the things I've tried to get people to think about is rather than approaching it that way, guys, when the rules of the game aren't working for you, don't change the rules, change the game. It's time for us to flip this on its head and start going after the people out there that are attacking us and extract a price out of them and make them pay such a high price is that they either make two choices. One, they just stop the attack because they can't afford to do it anymore. Or two, it's called displacement. You move on to a different target because it's easier and cheaper to go attack that target. And this gets back into... you ever heard the saying, think outside the box?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where it comes from?
No.
It comes from an industrial psychologist from an experiment done 100 years ago with college graduates. And so what you do is you take three rows of three dots. So like this, three rows of three dots. You put them up there. And what I do, and when I just did a keynote down in Florida, and I said, and what I did is I put it up there and then just faintly, but enough you could see, I put red dots outlining the outside dots. I said, how many of you guys up here see a box? And every hand went up. And so bingo, this is where I've got them all, because now I ask them, now I want you to connect all nine dots with four straight lines. Don't take your pen off the paper. They can't do it. And this industrial psychologist used the same thing. Gestalt psychiatrists used the same things. And what happened was people, they narrow their field of view, they narrow their thinking because they've been told, oh, this is the boundaries. Well, that's the disadvantage we have. So what keeps me worried and thing I'm always constantly, you know, talking about is, guys, quit thinking yesterday's thoughts. Albert Einstein said the problems of today can't be solved at the same level of thinking they were created. Quit thinking inside here. What you got to do is start thinking it's the problem isn't the problem. The problem isn't the way you think about the problem. There's only one problem that matters, and how do our adversaries think about the problem? And the way they think about it, the way you solve it, so if you put nine dots on that paper, the way you solve it is by starting at the bottom dot, going up and outside the box, coming down through the second and sixth dot, coming back over, and then coming back up. So there's two areas there where you go outside the box. So this is where our adversaries operate. They operate, they think out here and they operate out here. I said, look, We have to operate within the rules. Carlos, back to Carlos's question, regulation and stuff. We have to operate within the rules, but there's no law that says we can't think outside the rules. So this is what I think a lot of times what we lack. So the thing that I'm most concerned about is the lack of critical thinking, the lack of imagination, the lack of inquisitiveness that we're seeing in people getting into this field. I tell them, question everything. Question my name. Question, you know, what I tell you. Go do your own due diligence. Verify first, then trust. That's the whole principle of a lot of the security approaches that we're taking, right? Zero trust. What does zero trust exactly means? I trust you zero. So you have to authenticate on a regular basis. You know, you micro segment your architecture. You apply zero trust. So it's verify who you are before I can trust you. And so there's a variety of mechanisms. So I think for me, though, I think the thing I worry about is we're getting our lunch ate by China. Russia is still, don't underestimate Russia. Joseph Stalin said one time, quantity has a quality all its own. Russia can throw enough people at it. They will stay in this game. They're not going to give up. You look at the recent meeting between Putin and the rocket man, Kim Jong-un. You know, so there's these things going on. I can't tell you the number of times the Russian foreign minister, Lavrov, has met with leaders of Hamas, with Iran, with Hezbollah. So, and these are people that become useful idiots, become, as Stalin said, proxies. And now, so I start looking at, from a cyber standpoint, the number of proxies that are out there that are working at the behest of state actors to accomplish state goals and state objectives of espionage or cyber espionage, you know, or intellectual property theft or disruption. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking at is I'm looking at the proliferation of these threats going out there and how still poorly we're doing addressing a lot of these threats from a government standpoint.
So, you know, it's always been said that, you know, it's really hard to find cybersecurity talent, especially in the entry level. You know, there's such a high demand, but now I'm starting to see tons of CISO positions where so many CISOs are just bowing out, going in and doing their own thing. Tons of CISO positions open. I mean, do you think the heat's just getting too hot in the kitchen? Or, I mean, what do you think's going on with that? Because there is, I see it every day, you know, especially because I'm working with these events all over the country, all over North America. And somebody that was here yesterday, a major player, has now decided to take early retirement, go off on their own. And, you know, now that we're having indictments and things like that, what do you see the future of these rules?
Well, you know, the old joke is, do you know what CIO stands for? Career is over. You know? Career is super over for CISOs. Yeah, but I'll tell you, I think what it is too is after a while, people do things because they want to feel like they're accomplishing something. There's a reward. Like I said, I told you I was working on my book. I have a 104,000 word novel that I wrote about a detective with a covert CIA pass. It's hard work. But when I got it done, when I got my part done and I could write the end, you know, basically it's done, there is a sense of accomplishment. It felt like I'd accomplished something. Well, it's getting harder and harder in this business to feel like you've accomplished something because there's more being thrown at you. There's fewer resources being given to you to accomplish that. There's an old, like I said, I'm an old farm boy from Kansas. There's an old farmer saying that says, we the unknowing, led by the unwilling, having done so much for so long with so little, we're now qualified to do anything with nothing. And so we're kind of getting down to that point. So I think a lot of these folks are going, they lack that sense of accomplishment anymore because it's never ending. It's getting the pages on the weekend. It's getting the pages in the middle of the night. I say pages, here I am, you know, dating myself. You know, it's getting the phone calls. It's getting the texts, you know, alerts all the time, something going on. And I think the thing is too, is I think some of these folks are rightly frustrated because when I testified in Congress, I remember one of the statements a member of Congress said. He said, look, in the government, we never give them enough time and money to do it right. But when we screw up, we always give them enough time and money to do it over. Take a look at breaches that happen in companies and look at the amount of money that is spent when a breach happens or an incident happens. It is far, far more, orders of magnitude more than the actual cost of solving the solution had they just listened to the CISO and the CIO and said, remember that $2 million you didn't want to give us, where we could have built this whole thing out and defended this and actually had a really good, robust, et cetera, build SOC, whatever it is. Guess what now? We're spending $7 million, which I think is the average cost now of a breach. It's what it's going to cost you. And by the way, lawyers make a lot of that money because you've got a lot of risk. There we get back into the regulatory question again. What are the notifications requirements on breach notifications? How fast? How soon? The SEC now has regulations about breach notifications if you're a publicly traded company. I just think, you know, and I think the other thing too is, especially, and I've seen this in government too, it's called the silver tsunami. You know, look, you know, gray hair, people retiring. Well, the number of jobs in government is going up like this, but the number of people applying is going down like this. So you've got this gap here, and especially cybersecurity, I think now the figure is 450 to 500,000 open jobs. You can't hire your way out of it. So we have to rethink this problem, right? Change the game. And I think one of the things that will help these CISOs now that are trying to stay in the game is going to be the use of things like large language models, the ability to use AI. For example, let me give you a quick example. Imagine that you're somebody just graduated college and you're looking for a job, but you don't have mad cyber skills yet, but you're trying to work on it. Well, I could hire you, and in a span of a day, I could teach you how to critically think and how to ask the right questions of the data. Now, the question I'm asking of the data is I go to my AI tool that I have that has access to all of the information enterprise-wide, and I say, show me all the laptops that have or that are susceptible to vulnerabilities, CVE, etc., 123, that are connecting to China. Now, it would take a tier one analyst, or maybe a tier two, hours, days, to go through that stuff. Now you're talking about the ability for somebody with a day of training to be able to generate that information, basically function as a tier one SOC analyst, and now push that to a tier two analyst who's now, you've given it to them gift wrapped with a bow around it that says, here's all the information. Now they can go start working on remediating it. And now your tier three people who might be do threat hunting and higher level stuff, they can, I mean, you've got a fabulous tool now that's going to allow you. So I think AI is going to help us really increase the speed and precision of the decision making we do. It's going to help us increase the mean time, you know, shorten the mean time between reaction, you know, the OODA loop, observe, orient, decide, and act. It's going to help us increase the speed and precision of that OODA loop so that we can now make decisions quicker, faster, better, and then apply actions to them quicker, faster, better. So I think there's hope on the horizon, but it's going to take a while. But I will tell you this, it's been my experience. And like I said, it's borne out from the testimony in Congress to what I hear people talking about. When a breach happens, people will come up with the money. It's just they don't come up with the money when they should have. So I tell people, you'll either pay me $1 now or you'll pay me $10 later. But one way or the other, you're going to pay. It's your choice how much you want to pay.
And it's amazing that people still don't believe it's not going to happen to me. So.
Yeah, right. Well, all you have to do is just go back and look at every Fortune 500 company, Kim. I sat in a national security briefing. A guy named John Carlin was the assistant attorney general for national security. He met with every single head of legal for all of the Fortune 500 companies. Every single one of them has been breached, from Apple, Microsoft, obviously, all the way down. Every Fortune 500 company has been breached. So if it can happen to them, there's only two kinds of companies out there, those have been breached and those that don't know they're currently breached.
Well, I do want to like give a shout out to all those CISOs. I'm very lucky because I have so many of, you know, really great Fortune 500 company to Fortune 100 company that their CISOs come and they speak at my events and they spend the days at my events. And they're so busy, they don't have to, but they are sharing their wealth with their community, and we're not paying them. They're coming out, you know, they're coming out free and doing it just to continue to educate their community. So huge shout out to them, because I don't even know how they have the time to do it. And it actually ends up being a fun day for them because they can breathe a little until, I guess, they get home and they see everything they have to catch up on because they've been gone. But I kind of look at a CISO like Bill Clinton when he started his term. He was a young man. And at the end of his term, boy, did he age. You know,
I tell you, every president, when you look at them, from Obama to Bush to Clinton, look at their hair and then they end up like me, you know, at the end of it. And it takes a toll. Mm-hmm. That kind of stress every single day, I can tell you this from personal experience in law enforcement, that kind of stress takes a huge toll mentally, physically, emotionally. And so I think a reason a lot of people are getting out of this, they're going, yeah, I love the work, but you know what? it's not worth it for my mental health. It's not worth it for my physical health. I know people that are working 18 hours a day. I'm sorry, guys, that's not sustainable, guys and girls. You need to come first. As I used to tell rookies that I trained, and when I was a trooper and I was getting trained, they talked to us about driving to get there. You do nobody any good if you crash and burn and you don't make it to help the person you were sent to help, right? So sometimes you got to go slow to go fast. Smooth is slow, slow is fast. So, but in this world where things are always on, things are happening all the time, you're being tasked, we got to do this now and we got to do this now. I think some people get to the point, it's kind of like they want to get back to doing a job or a work to where they have some satisfaction. They feel like, I'm appreciated for what I do. I can actually accomplish things. And there's a sense of accomplishment of being able to do big things and being able to create huge impact. But man, when you are drinking from the fire hose and it's constant day after day, I think people are saying, okay, there's something different in life. I think I need to go check it out.
And then you meet some really cool CISOs. There's a CISO out of Philadelphia, and Jessica, I can't think of her last name right off the top of my head. She's going to be sitting on my panel in Pittsburgh. She was our keynote speaker. She came from the GRC world, and she came from a SOC team, and now being the CISO, Maya team just probably told me, Hoffman, Jessica Hoffman. She came from, that world, and now she's the CISO, and she has a great SOC team, and she talked, her talk was on emotional intelligence and critical thinking, and it was great. I think we had one disgruntled person was like, oh, this is, he's old school. That's not what he wanted to hear, but 98% of our audience just walked out of there with a new way of thinking about things and how to handle the day-to-day stress and not let it get under your skin and not let it, consume all this time, because time is too short to be consumed with frustration and being angry and trying to control something you can't control.
That's me. You take the world as you find it, not as you wish it was. I know my sphere of influence. I know my sphere of control. It's like, I don't know if you remember Ricky Gervais's last monologue, with the Golden Globes, but it's like, if it's outside that, I'm sorry, guys, I don't care. I can't do anything about it. Why? Don't make me have to care about something that I have zero influence on, zero control over, zero input into. What I need to do and what I need to focus on is what's my sphere of influence, what's my sphere of reality, and I need to focus on doing that. So that's why, I've kind of gotten to the point now to where I do actually do less, but I accomplish more. Why? Because I'm very selective about what I do. You see stuff over here, that's my planner. I've gone back to written planner because I think the written word is more powerful. So I write things out. I'm more focused. So my goal is I want to accomplish more things, but I don't want to work as hard as I did to get there. So now I'm looking at, okay, how can I do things quicker, faster, better? How can I deliberately apply technology to help me solve some of these big problems? Because I don't want to be sitting out there, feel like I'm fighting it, like I'm Sisyphus trying to push a rock up and I get it halfway up and it rolls back over me and I got to do it all over again the next day. That is no fun.
Well, interesting, last night at this event, and I had, women that were in cyber from the VP of Wells Fargo down to an entry level at, a local bank here. And all these women were talking about it. And I had a few on my show in the last 6 months that were talking about imposter syndrome. And I really didn't understand what that meant, because I don't feel that in my career. But listening to how they were, I was like, explain that to me. What does that mean to you? And they're just like, I just feel like I'm not good enough. I can't do it. I can't do it enough. I'm not as good as the men because they've been here. And, the VP from Wells Fargo was like, you can't think that way, and there's so many young people in this industry that have that feeling, because it is overwhelming. It's a lot. It's a big job. The cybersecurity roles are big jobs. So, I definitely don't want to get off on that topic, but it is sad to me that we have really hard workers out there feeling like they're not good enough. And, we need them to be good enough where they are.
Yeah, we expect people to do the job. We just never teach them how to survive the job. And I can tell you that I've got, from a law enforcement background, I've got more friends that have died from suicide than from line of duty deaths. And we do a disservice to where we don't teach people how to understand what's really important. You got to don't fall victim to the tyranny of the urgent. You've really got to start figuring out what's important, do the important things, and quit getting sucked into the tyranny of the urgent and do it. Well, I just got an email comes in. Not my problem. You know, just because you put my name on an email, not my monkey, not my circus. So you go take care of that. Not my problem. And I think everybody wants to be, I just want to help. I'm sorry, guys. You've got to really, really think through this and say, are you really helping? Or are you really hurting when you try and take on all these things? Do 3 things, do them well. Don't do 10 things and do them half-ass.
Well, what are you going to do when your boss expects you to do 10 things and, you know, you only have the capability of doing 3 things to do them well?
So I refer them to the memo written many, many years ago, the Duke of Wellington, and he was given a task by the king and the gentleman at Whitehall to account for missing jars of jam and their cash box was a few pfennigs short or whatever else. He says, I can either do all of this, you know, for the boys at Whitehall make some bean counters happy, or I can stop the advance of Napoleon, but I can't do both, you know. So I think sometimes people are going to be shocked, but I think sometimes you have to push back and you have to say, I get it, but we have to make a trade-off, right? Because there's only so much that can be done and can be done well. Your question is, what do you want done and what do you want done well? And then let's trade that off and realize if everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. So the word priority means singular, but we talk about, I've got multiple priorities. No, you don't. You got multiple problems. Figure out what your priority is. Do that. I mean, every day, when I do my planning for the week, I have my weekly big 3 things that I'm going to accomplish. Then each day, I call it my daily big 1 plus 2, because I think it was the guy who started Keller Williams. He says, until my priority for the day is done, nothing else matters. Because if you don't get that big rock done, if you don't get that big thing done, it doesn't matter about the other stuff. You got to get those big things done. And I think sometimes we have to be not afraid to push back to say, look, Duke of Wellington, go read the letter. I can do this or I can do that, but I can't do both. So you need to help me decide what is important to you, what is not urgent, but what's important, what needs to be done, because not all of these things can be done. And I know people say, well, we got to address this. I will tell you, it's like fighting a fire. You can go out to a fire and there'd be 5 houses. You got to make the decision. You've only got enough. You've only have enough water to save 2. Yeah. You know, well, I'm going to spray. Then all 5 burn down. Right. So what have you accomplished? I sprayed water on. No, save the 2. Just realize that the other 3, you had to prioritize. You prioritize these 2 houses because that's, guess what? You go to war with what you have. You're a firefighter. You're out in the country. You come out with a tank truck. That's all you got. So I look at it this way too, but you can't be afraid to push back. I know people, well, I don't want to get fired. Hey, you know, sometimes you got to poke the bear if you want to get some, make something happen. And I'm not talking about being rude or being disrespectful, but I'm saying have a respectful discussion and go back in and say, here's what I'm able to do. Here's the, they even call it span of control when you're supervising. How many people can you supervise? 10 is about it. On an emergency, you can go up to 20 or 30, but you cannot manage. These people say, oh, I got 50 direct reports. BS. You're not doing anybody any good. When I ran my last corporate job, I was at Bell Labs, Alcatel-Lucent, 6 reports. I said 6 reports spanned over 347 people, but that's what I could manage building out public safety broadband. And so sometimes you have to make those trade-offs. They're hard discussions to have, but if you don't have the discussion, you'll be constantly tasked with more and more stuff until you go, sorry, there's a certain, you know, work-life balance is kind of, I know, gets overused, but you got to say, look, I can only accomplish so much and accomplish so much effectively. We need to decide what is it we want done and want done right and want done effectively, and then find solutions for the other things. So not an easy discussion to have, and nobody has the answer. If everybody says, I got it figured out, they're lying to you. Nobody has it figured out. You just got to keep working on it.
Well, and I think that's a good place to tie this all together because we only have 1 minute left. But I think to just be, you know, a good cybersecurity practitioner, really following those guidelines are going to get you where you need to go because there's no way you can do it all in a day. But again, Morgan Wright, Chief Security Advisor from SentinelOne, thank you so much for being with us. There is way more we could have talked about, so I'm not going to wait another year to have you back. Love to have you back on our show soon again. Thanks for everything you're doing for the industry, and thanks for being on the show today. Everyone, thanks for tuning in for another episode of And Security for All. We will see you next Friday. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Stay safe and secure, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. you for tuning into And Security for All. Be sure to join your host, Kim Hakim, for another episode of the show next Friday at noon Pacific time and 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. And don't forget, you can follow Kim on LinkedIn by searching for Kim Hakim. That's Kim, H-A-K-I-M, to keep yourself posted on all of her upcoming cybersecurity events. Are you a cybersecurity professional that needs to earn continuing educational hours? FutureCon Events brings high-level cybersecurity training, discovering cutting-edge security approaches, managing risk in the ever-changing threat of the cybersecurity workforce. Cybersecurity is no longer just an IT problem. To learn more about attending a virtual event, go to FutureConEvents.com or email info@FutureConEvents.com. Or follow us on LinkedIn or Twitter at FutureConHQ. Don't miss the weekly FutureCon Seamless podcast series, focusing on the insights and thoughts of chief security officers and industry pioneers making a difference throughout the world. Kim Hakim, CEO of FutureCon Events, and Darren Anderson, CEO and co-founder Next Robotics, host Seamless Podcast, started by a team of entrepreneurs with experience in fields like smart cities, technology, cybersecurity. The result is a series of podcasts unlike anything you've ever heard anywhere. Listen where you get your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.